Taxation number 21580, rule 1.
Eric Blanchard, rule 1. Where were you born, please?
That is a difficult question. A London suburb, and I'll have to think about it.
Which year were you born?
1922.
Where did you grow up and have your schooling?
I grew up in Sidmouth. I moved there in 1927. I remember the date because that date is on a silver platter just behind us there.
How old were you when you left school?
15.
So that must have been in 37. Did you get a job?
Yes, I wanted to own a garage. So I went to learn the garage trade in a very large distributor in Exeter.
Is that what you were doing when war was declared?
Yes, it was.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I heard it, I got on my motorcycle, and I went 2 miles away to a village of Newton Poplethorpe, and there, at about 11:45, some pretty girls came out of church. One of them was my wife, and two friends of mine who'd been in the Territorial Army turned up on their motorbikes, there with their SEAL helmets on, and they had been on Saturday, that's September 2nd or 3rd. So they then reported to the to Exeter, and they were told to go home. And yes, and it was quite funny that I hadn't joined the Terriers like they used to have done. I'd been in the OTC at school, and that, you may remember that in pre-war schools. Some of us, Cadet Corps was not around in those days, but most boarding schools ran an OTC, Officer Training Corps. And I'd been to camp and I'd done that sort of thing. So I wasn't really interested in... I hope there are 5 phones in the house sometimes. Yeah, that was the end of what I was concerned. I do remember all about that day, and some of my friends we just compiled a book about the day war broke out, and it so happened that I was due to tell our Rotary Club exactly what I've told you now. Going back to September the 3rd, I just went on home then to see my family and carried on with my job until I was 18 years old. I hadn't thought of joining till I was 18. I thought, well, that was it. So conscription was 20. You had to go at age 20 at that time. And therefore, I volunteered at the age of 18. On my 18th birthday, I went into Exeter and signed on. And then I was called up. The correct thing to say is I was attested. We went up to Cardington, where the airships were built, and you were attested, had a medical sworn in, and then sent home, and gave a little silver badge, but I haven't got it now, an RAFVR, and I went home for the summer months. And then soon after that, of course, soon after we tested, came Dunkirk, and my father, being the local surveyor, was very much into preparing the for invasion. So, you know, troops arrived to wire, put the barbed wire on the seafront, and my father had his men cutting up trees and putting them into the ground to theoretically stop gliders and things from landing on them. And I remember going out one night with a friend of mine, and I always remember his name, and he was a pupil in a solicitor's practice in a little town nearby, and he said, my boss is going to watch with this LDV, home card hadn't been invented then, and he said, are you coming along? I said, oh yes, I'd go. So we went on to a place called West Hill, and with his boss and a shotgun, and we waited for the Germans to come, and when we went home, and sometime about September, I think, the call came to go up to the RAF, and my father took me to Exeter Station, and it was the evening train, I think, going all the way to Blackpool, and I gradually got there. It took a long time, and I think it was about daylight when we got to Blackpool. And one of the things I always remember then was how Blackpool was all the boarding houses were full of RAF, and we went into to the first digs were in the South Shore, I remember that, and the man, a recruit like myself, was he, but he could play the piano, and he was playing the piano. And the tune I should remember, because it was a typical wartime tune. Anyway, be that as it may, I said to my father, yes, I wouldn't be air crew. Didn't want to go air crew because my mother was poorly, and he said, oh, it's bad. And, of course, we were near Exeter, so there were chaps that had been flying in the Battle of Britain. We used to meet them and in the pubs around. And so I went to a course at the flight mechanic and the engines. I remember that. And the original place for this School of Technical Training, I've forgotten what number it was at the time, was in the multi-story car park in Blackpool. There weren't many multi-story car parks in England at the time, I don't suppose, but Blackpool was far ahead of the times, and they'd got one. And so they'd taken it over, and sort of one floor was one course and one floor was another. And as winter progressed, the central heating was provided. And then, because I came into the ironmongery trade all those years later, they'd been and bought Aladdin blue flame heaters. They were a big grey heater, big, about today we call them a 2¾ kilowatt output. And they'd piled these in the ramp, at the bottom of the ramp, going into the thing. And that was the RS town. And the warming us. And it's quite exciting, really, Blackpool then, because everything was for 6 months, and it went up to 8 months for troops. And therefore you would go to the Tower Ballroom, listen to Reginald Dixon on his on his organ, go to a cinema or a theatre, so providing it was in the Winter Garden or in the Tower. And yes, Christmas game, I remember the pantomime and the Opera House, which is part of the Winter Garden, was our dear comedian of the days. What was and it was banjo. Banjo, what?
George Formby?
Yes, George Formby. It was George Formby, yeah. But the other thing about it was while the Blitz had got cracking, the London theatres, of course, closing down, we can go and see first-class shows in Blackpool, again, very, very cheap. So anyway, and another thing that happened there was a load of Poles arrived, the Polish Air Force, and they used to see them marching up again with their great big long coats on. I think they were almost fur collars, I can't remember that, and we call them funny hats, but they weren't funny to them. So, anyway, the course ended, and I was then posted, you might say, really near home, except it was a difficult place to get to. With the railway system, because I was near Dorchester, and it was called Holmesley, not Holmesley South, that's good, many years later. This was Warmwell, and I always remember that Spitfire squadron, and I think probably he was very green and he'd come just from training. So the chiefy, who's usually, well, at that stage, has certainly been a regular and been a Halton, what we would call a Halton brat. And he'd been in the Air Force many years. And didn't think much of people, young men like me. See, he gave me the job to look after the chore horses. And the chore horses were little petrol engines, just exactly the same make as I've got on my lawnmower to this day, a Briggs & Stratton engine, and that drove the dynamo, that charged the batteries that started the Spitfires, and it was called the Hyderabad Squadron, and so the night aim of Hyderabad obviously provided money for us, I remember that. And
what number squadron was that?
I think it's called 152. I'll look that up in a minute.
It's all right, it's on record anyway.
Yeah. And anyway, I got friendly with a couple of Canadian blokes, and then they said, "Well, we're going to go for aircraft." I said, "Don't go down, I'll put him as well." So we saw an education officer, and he said, "Oh, here's some sort of papers. We can look at that and see what you remember the maths and do that sort of thing." And I realised what a clot I'd been in not volunteering earlier to be aircrew, because you know I had been educated, but I'd left school fairly early. And today you'd have said I was a dropout, you know, at 15. So you know, I wanted to get into work. On my garage. Anyway, so we went, called for a medical to start with, local medical, and the hospital, medical centre. And for some reason, I don't know why, they said, "Oh, no, I'm sorry, we'll have to send you to the Army Hospital up the road." And that was Bovington, the tank corps, and they're still there to this day. Bovington squad, not as famous as your museum, but there's a Bovington tank museum there. And so I was parked there. And then, I don't know, was something around the place. "Oh, we transfer you now." And I went into a convoy. Practical days, if I remember, can't remember really the time was. And I went to Winchester, to what were called, I think they were wartime emergency hospitals, because it was really the workhouse. There I was treated, and I honestly didn't know what I was supposed to be. You're a bit of a nerd, I don't know what's supposed to belong to you. And then somebody said, "Oh, I think he's got Bright's disease." I said, "Well, well, I have to come out. Oh, yes, I'll probably come out the Air Force, you know. And I carried on with that. My job used to go around to get the cigarettes for all the men, came with a list of what you wanted, and go around and scrounge the cigarettes to buy. Oh, I'd buy them, but you've got, you know, to find them. It's 1941, you see, it isn't scarce, but I suppose, but the railway station was a good source, and I used to get them there. Anyway, all of a sudden, they said, I don't think there's anything wrong with you. I don't know what it was. I was sent back to Walmart, only to find that the Germans had been again and bombed us. They had bombed me where I'd been bombed there. I'd been there before. And, of course, when you report six, you're only given a small kit. That's, you take... I don't know, you take pajamas, I can't remember, wash kit and that sort of thing, and a small haversack, which is, that's why it's called small kit, I suppose. And, of course, all my kit had gone. And the station had moved. People like myself were living in tents in the woods at the bottom of the airfield, and the station was virtually empty, except when they come to, you know, the maintenance was going on in the hangars and that sort of thing, and I suppose the station obviously all the stores, they were still there, but you went home to sleep in the woods, and the mess was in the woods, so intense. And anyway, so it was again a struggle to sort of get through the paperwork and. Why, boy, you know, how you got to lose your kit? And I said, well, you know, I was sent away, straight away to hospital, and you didn't get any chance. Anyway, none of that. We were quite good fun living in the bell tents, and it's summer coming. Then I bought a little car, chap. I remember that, an Austin 7, 1926. Gate change, and it was I bought it for £10, and an open tourer, but got by now a bit dodgy in the I can't think correctly the name of the plastic, the bits that you slot in with, which were on the side windows. Anyway, it was pleasant, and I had this one car, and I didn't do. I thought, well, I failed air crew medical. And so I thought, no, but didn't think anybody about it. I got then posted to a 52E course, and that's got another grade up. 52E is a higher grade and more pay than a flight mechanical. And you normally you might work in the hangars more than on the flights. And that was at Western Superman. Lo and behold, I was posted from there to Chibnall. And that was, Chibnall was a Coastal Command place at the time. Well, it wasn't all the rest of the war. But here I was, I nearly home, you might say. And my father knew some friends from around there, so I was going to have a bath and have a Sunday tea, and oh, it was quite luxurious. I suppose, again, I was a bit of a clot there. I was a youngster, and they hadn't got any room for me, so I was billeted, believe it or not, in some officers' quarters, quite near, and with two Americans. Now, when I talk to people about, don't forget, is 1941, we hadn't got to December the 7th, and there were Americans who were what they're called civilian technical corps. They volunteered, they are civilians, and they volunteered to come and help. And my old boy that I was in was had married a British woman in the First World War when he's been stationed in England then. And she'd bore him children, she died, and he felt he was doing us a favour. In the next bunk, so we shared a room together, and a tiny little tent. Again, I could tell you the name of the stove, the little cast iron stove, which was not the tortoise type, the tall ones for the barricades, but it's a pretty small one, just for the officers' quarters, you see, for... And the neighbour was another American, but quite amazing that to this old boy, he was a goddamn Jew. Well, of course, I only knew a Jew boy at another Jew at school because he didn't go to chapel on Sundays, but I'd never come across a goddamn Jew before, and I didn't know. I thought, well, it's not a nice thing to do, and I was with that old boy in Barnstable in a pub, and would you believe it was December the 7th? Quite incredible. And he said, we'll do now. And anyway, I was obviously a bit of a clot because they wanted somebody to be detached to help two civilians install a generator at a place called Appledore. And at the bottom of that hill, 400 yards down the road, was where the generator was to be installed. And I was posted there. And eventually, they built a camp for us, and we went to live in that camp. Before that, few days before, we were in civilian houses taken over at again, it's such a coincidence, and Westward Hill, what we call a drive, right where you can go right down to the beach, and they'd taken over these whole houses, and they were empty, set bar to the steel bed, and we were fed in a local restaurant by two old ladies and her daughter, one old lady and her two daughters, who to me they were a pretty terrifying bunch, and then they opened them the camp. And while I was at the camp, I was quite friendly with the corporal in the office, and he said, "Have you seen this Air Ministry order?" Now it's 1942 now, and he said, "Flight engineers wanted, and if you're a fitted 2E, that is the class or classification they want to see, or fitted 2." Could be fitted to E, fitted to A. I think it could be either. And so, again, because Devon's a funny old county, the headquarters where I had to go in an interview were at Bobby Tracy, which is, of course, a train journey down to Exeter. The Exeter back up on that, and then to this place, and a young WAP officer interviewed. I don't think she knew, well, she wouldn't have known one pilot for a navigator or anything like that, really. It was quite, because she would be an admin young lady in this radar chain. And I was then told to report to the Western Supermare, to the Aircrew Selection Board. And I did that, and the group captain interviewed me then. And he said, you ought to be a pilot, or at least pilot, or pilot navigator bomber. I'll put you down for that. He said, "You don't want to be a flight engineer." I said, "Oh, that's just right. That's exactly what I wanted to do nearly 2 years ago when I started. Of course, by this time I'd passed the aircrew medical that day, and so I returned, and you're getting the white flash to put in your cap if you wanted to wear it, to show you the aircrew under selection or aircrew under training. And I was sent back to that. I wouldn't dare wear that piece of white around in my camp at Westward Ho. I had said to the group captain, because I said, you know, I'm not doing much in the war, I'm just with a lot of lasses, very nice. We should have been nice, and you've got a good golf course there, but to a group captain and to an AC2, it's a bit dark corner. I said, well, get me posted somewhere. I got posted, all right, to Henlow. And that was a maintenance section, and we were marched to work sometimes in the band, and then go in, and it was just like being in a factory, except you were getting RAF pay, and my job was to look at the gears, and there were particular, it was a radial engine, a Bristol engine, and all I did every day was to look at these gears that had come in and check them and put them on, and that was it. Being near London, you could actually get into London, which is amazing, and they got all sorts of things arranged for them locally. They're quite well organised with their events and their NAFI and things like that. And all of a sudden, my posting came through. And I was delighted to see that. Where was it? Number 4 school, a technical training, St. Athens, for a flight engineer. I said, oh no, I'm now PMB. I said, can I see somebody senior? I didn't ask to see an officer, which I should have done. I saw a warrant officer, and that was as far as I got. He said, oh no, he said, son, I should take it and go, you want it, you'll never get flying if you take that. So again, off we go to number 4 School of Technical Training at St. Athens in Wales. And at that time, of course, the course was much more protracted than what would turn out to be later. And it included a little air gunnery course at the end of that, on a godforsaken spot, a little bit further nearer to Newport, I think. No, Newport. I should remember that, because I used to sail there until I sold my boat a year or two ago. We'd go up to Ulfgrim and cross over. Anyway, not to worry. I got posted, came home on leave. I'm now a sergeant, and I got my little badge on, flight engineer. And whether I had too much beer, I don't know. But I got diarrhea, and my father called in his local doctor, and he said, you better go to the RAF hospital. That's, and they'd taken over a hotel. So I went there and got over the diarrhea. And then I was posted up to a place called Wigsley to this conversion unit, heavy conversion unit. And then I met up with my crew, who I was to do my first tour with. And I was Sergeant Stevens and the navigator, Ernie Howe. He was quite an old man. Sergeant Stevens was 3 or 4 months older than myself. And the bomber, bless his soul, he was from a very tall, good-looking boy, and obviously well supplied with cash from some uncle in London. And he was from Chile, and Chilean-born. And father was English, or British, and mother was Chilean. and he volunteered. And again, I talked to the regular officers now in the RAF, and they said, do you know what a BLABA? No. Well, it's a British Latin American volunteer, BLAB. And they had their own club in town, and there used to go. And but Dickie, unfortunately, was not to survive, and I have a cross planted in the body.